If you enjoy rabbits, you'll love our other podcast, Tanis. Tanis is a docudrama about an ancient and mysterious myth, perhaps the last genuine mystery of the information age. Download the podcast The Guardian calls compelling and wildly addictive at itunes.com/Tanis or tanispodcast.com. Tanis, it's television for your ears.
Ready when you are.
You believe your friend who was playing rabbits?
She started seeing mysterious men in gray.
What did she ask you?
She asked me how many steps to the lighthouse.
What do you know about chaos theory?
The streets were red, then black with blood.
Blood. That sounds poetic. Where are you now?
The bottom line isn't money or purpose. It's inspiration.
Are we still gonna have sex?
I'm afraid not.
She believed Hazel killed Emily Masterson.
Maybe later.
For sure, later.
I first heard about the game shortly after my best friend, Yumiko Takada, disappeared. I started this podcast because I want to find out what happened to my friend. From the Public Radio Alliance and Minnow Beats Whale, you're listening to Rabbits. I'm Carly Parker. Stay with us. Last time, Jones had dropped a bombshell. Were the Marigold radio recordings messages from the past that somehow answered Jones's question from the present? That's impossible, of course, isn't it? Jones appeared convinced that the game was somehow communicating from the past. This seemingly impossible communication, along with the appearance of what he suspected were wardens, had him worried. Very worried. Let's say that the game really is trying to communicate from the past, which I am in no way saying that I believe is true.
Okay.
What are the implications of this type of communication as far as rabbits is concerned?
It's unprecedented. To my knowledge, this type of direct communication from the game has never happened in the past.
Could it be the wardens?
Maybe, but direct interference by the wardens would be concerning.
How concerning?
Allegedly, the wardens only appear when the game has been bumped off track somehow and things are in danger of falling apart.
Well, that sounds ominous.
It is. If they can't put things right, the rumor is the wardens have to allow the dimensional stream to fall into entropy.
Well, now that sounds remarkably bad.
It would mean the end of everything as we know it.
What do you mean, everything?
It's complicated, but I think we can safely assume it would mean the end of all of us.
Safely assume. Okay, Jones, you're being more confusing than normal.
Imagine you were cloned.
Great. Okay.
And you were killed, but your clone lived on.
Oh.
Your clone would still kind of be you, but...
but not me.
It would be something like that.
How bad are things, ticking clockwise?
Pretty bad.
Like, years? Months? Days?
I'd say weeks, maybe. If those people in gray are wardens, and if these communications from the past are coming from them, then I believe the game has been so seriously compromised that things are, well, very bad.
Okay, but if the game is trying to communicate, to put things right, I mean, that's a good thing, isn't it?
Maybe. I hope so.
Jones and I spoke about a few other things, mostly unrelated to rabbits, and then said our goodnights. We had to get up early. We were going to visit Arcadia. Juneau is the capital of Alaska and the second largest city in the United States by area. Named after prospector Joe Juneau, the city is unusual in that there are no roads connecting the city to the rest of Alaska, or North America for that matter. You can, however, drive around the city, but you'll need to bring your car over via ferry. Juneau is, for all intents and purposes, an island city. All goods come in and out by plane or by boat. Clea led us deep into a forested area north of Juneau. We walked for a long time through a heavily wooded section that ran along the bank of a river. Clea was a fast hiker. Jones and I did our best to keep up. Arcadia wasn't quite what I was expecting. I pictured a beautiful, serene garden environment. Instead, it was something else entirely. We reached it by taking a long, very narrow mountainside pathway. It's a good thing I brought my hiking shoes. This was mountain lion country. At certain points, it felt like we were walking miles above the ground. One wrong step, and it was definitely over. It was an extremely long way down. We eventually made it to a level section, a kind of valley area. We continued walking about half a mile or so through the middle of the valley before we came upon a large clearing. It appeared to be man-made. It was an almost perfectly symmetrical circle, symmetry that was amplified by the fact that there was a ring of about 50 or so old cars, arranged in a perfect circle. In the middle of everything stood a large light gray stone. I'm calling it light gray, but it was actually pretty hard to tell what color it was. It was covered in some kind of strange graffiti. This is Arcadia?
That's what they call it.
What's with the cars?
Apparently nobody knows.
And that weird rock thing.
The Karzhorn.
The what?
It's a Karzhorn. An ancient pagan ritualistic stone. Legend has it that a Karzhorn is placed at a barrier between this world and the world of Faerie for protection.
Why do they need protection from us?
It's the other way around.
What do you mean?
It's to protect us from them.
From fairies?
Yes. Although more accurately, where the Karzhorn is concerned, they're referred to as the Small Ones.
The Small Ones. They don't sound very scary.
The Small Ones are cannibalistic. In Celtic lore, they're often stealing babies and baking them into pies that they sell back to the families.
No kidding.
Pretty scary, actually.
The Karzhorn, K-A-R-S-W-E-R-N, was about 7 feet tall and looked like a giant river rock, as if it had been worn while sitting at the bottom of the biggest river in the world. It was incredibly smooth and very cool to the touch.
It had no shine at all. A large amount of arcane symbols had been both carved, painted, and sharpied onto the stone. It looked like about 1,000 years of graffiti, in every form possible. I didn't recognize any of the symbols except for one that had been carved way up near the top. It was the moonrise. The triangle with the circle above it. I took some photos of the cars and the stone and walked back over to Jones and Cleo.
What now?
We start looking.
For what?
For anything.
Great. Springtime is a great time to hit the reset button and re-tackle personal goals, like getting fit, cleaning, and cooking. Luckily, Blue Apron makes incredible home cooking easy and accessible by delivering seasonal recipes with step-by-step instructions and pre-portioned ingredients right to your door, all for less than $10 per meal. You can even customize your recipes based on your preferences and select a delivery option that's right for you. Blue Apron has partnered with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the U.S. to ensure that all their ingredients are of the highest quality. And because Blue Apron ships the exact amount of ingredients required, they are reducing food waste. I love Blue Apron because it's delicious and inspiring after running through worlds both real and virtual, chasing down the secrets of a mysterious game, but also because I've learned how to make some amazing meals. Some of the meals available in May include beef teriyaki stir fry with sugar snap peas and lime rice, baked spinach and egg flatbread with sautéed asparagus and lemon aioli, three cheese and baby broccoli stromboli with tomato and oregano dipping sauce, and crispy salmon and roasted potato salad with pickled mustard seeds and creme fraiche sauce. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/rabbits. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/rabbits. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. I've already told you this a few times, but we need so many websites at the Public Radio Alliance that I feel it bears repeating. Because we use Squarespace for everything, our sites look good wherever you happen to be looking at them. Laptops, desktops, or mobile devices. Squarespace is the best. Their incredible award-winning designer templates are the most beautiful way to present your ideas online. Create a beautiful website with Squarespace's all-in-one platform. There's nothing to install, patch, or upgrade. If you have a passion that you obsess over, like attending rare book auctions and purchasing old library card catalogs in the hopes of uncovering a clue to some strange underground game, or selling your collection of rare bunny slippers on eBay. Whatever it is that keeps you up at night, that drives you creatively, you need to get it out there. If you need a domain as well, Squarespace offers a unique domain experience that's fully transparent and simple to set up. So, share your ideas with the world. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code RABBITS to get 10% off your first purchase. That's squarespace.com and use the offer code RABBITS. Squarespace. Make your next move. We spent more than 3 hours there, looking through cars, climbing through back seats into trunks to pop the locks. All of the cars were unlocked, so there was no problem examining them. Apparently, dedicated players had been coming up here for a while, although Cleo told Jones that Arcadia moved around, and that this location with the cars was only 4 or 5 years old. She said that the cars weren't was the only constant. That's how you knew you were in the right spot. We were about to give up for the day when I found something.
It had been stuffed into the back of the glove compartment of a green and faux wood paneled 1978 Ford Pinto station wagon. It was a small wooden spool of thread. It looked to be at least 50 years old, probably more. The thread was green. The label read, Découvée, cotton green thread.
What is it?
It's a spool of thread.
Let's go.
That's it?
Yeah, it looks like that's all we're going to find here.
That was it. A spool of green thread. Jones and I went back to the hotel to eat and research the company that manufactured the thread. We still had a few hours until Cleo was due to drive us back to the airport. On our way through the lobby of the hotel, I saw something on a tourist map of the area. It was a lighthouse. Actually, there were two of them on the map. The Five Finger Lighthouse and the Sentinel Island Light. So, how many steps to the lighthouse? I did a little research when I got back to my room. 31 steps up to the Five Finger Lighthouse and 20 to the light at Sentinel Island. I wrote the numbers down in my journal. For some reason, Yumiko wanted to know how many steps to the lighthouse. If uncovering the number of steps up to some lighthouse is going to bring me closer to finding Yumiko, well then, I need to know the answer to that question. We weren't able to find anything related to the company behind that spool of thread, at least nothing that appeared connected to rabbits, but Jones told me there was definitely something here. He was convinced that the spool of thread had been there for a reason. On the way back to Seattle, he popped a pen through the top of the spool and discovered something hidden inside. It was a tiny bit of celluloid. It looked kind of like a piece of old Super 8 film. Jones said he thought it was microfiche. Very tiny and very old microfiche. Jones was right. It was some kind of Cold War era microfiche. Back in Seattle, we had it scanned and blown up. It was a photograph of a petroleum production plant. There was a name visible on one of the buildings. Gazprom Neft. It was an oil facility in northern Russia, built sometime within the past 7 years. So, now, the big question. How did a photo of a modern plant in northern Russia end up on a tiny bit of microfiche from World War II, discovered stashed in the glove box of an old Pinto station wagon in Alaska? Jones told me I was asking the wrong question. He said anything we uncovered at Arcadia would definitely be connected to the game, to Nine. We needed to focus on finding that connection, rather than wonder at the delivery system of the clue. So, I started looking into northern Russia. It was right around this time that two things happened. The first thing, I received an update from Frank and Dave over at the arcade game restoration shop about the Stargate, or Defender 2, logic board. The second, Yumiko's brother Adam called. The police had a lead.
Hello?
Hey, Adam.
How are things?
I'm okay. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. The same.
What's going on?
Well, the police had me come in to look at some surveillance footage.
What footage?
It was security camera stuff. Do you know the FBI actually have cameras up all over Seattle?
Yeah, I read something about that.
I mean, they admit the cameras are there, but they won't say why.
Yeah, right. Creepy.
Or comforting, or useful, I suppose, depending on your point of view. I mean, they seem to help in London and Glasgow. At least that appears to be the general consensus so far.
Right, I suppose. Okay, so what did they find?
There was a guy working at a food truck who had been following Yumiko on the day she went missing.
Okay.
and they wanted to see if I knew who he was.
And did you know him?
No.
What truck?
That bright pink Thai food truck. The one up around East Pike and Broadway.
Yeah, I know that one. So did the police question the guy?
No.
Why not?
Because he never went back to work.
That's weird.
Yeah, I mean, suspicious, they thought. They asked the owner of the truck for information about the guy. Turns out he was using a fake ID. They said it was strange that he'd worked there for over a month and never actually tried to cash his paychecks.
Really?
Yeah. The owner of the truck checked. They never went through. Listen, I gotta run.
Okay, is there anything else you can tell me about this guy?
He was a white guy with dreadlocks. Mid-30s, maybe?
Yikes.
Yeah. The security camera picks him up as he leaves the food truck. Additional cameras show coverage of him following her for a few blocks. But they lose him when Yumiko enters the library.
On Harvard Avenue?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Anything else?
The police double-checked the library, and nobody remembers seeing Yumiko or a dreadlocked white guy.
Security cameras in the library?
They show Yumiko looking at some books for a bit and then leaving.
And the dreadlock guy?
No sign of him.
Okay.
Carly?
Yeah?
Maybe it's time to... you know.
What? Give up?
No, never. But I just
what?
Mean... the police can handle this. You should... I don't know, get some rest. You don't sound... like yourself.
I appreciate your concern.
Carly...
I mean it. Thanks, Eden. I can take care of myself.
Okay. Well, let's make sure to talk again soon. Right?
Okay. So I went to the library. Anna, a friend of mine from high school, worked there as a supervisor.
Carly Parker, how long has it been?
I don't know, at least 2 years?
3, I think.
Really?
Yumiko's birthday at the sushi place with all the Christmas lights.
Right. How are you?
I'm good. I'm sorry to hear about Miko. I was gonna call, but...
yeah, it's pretty crazy.
So, what brings you to the library?
Yumiko.
What about her?
She was here, just before she disappeared.
Really?
Yeah, the police have her on a surveillance camera looking at some books.
Do you know what day of the week?
It was Thursday.
Makes sense, I don't work Thursdays.
Right, so you didn't see her.
No, I'm sorry.
Listen, I know it's a strange request, but could you tell me if Yumiko took out a book that day?
You think her taking out a book might have had something to do with her disappearance?
No, it's... well, we had a big argument about something, and, well... if she was taking out a book to prove something to me and that somehow led to her abduction or something,
I get it.
I felt terrible lying to Anna. And if you're listening to this podcast now, Anna... I apologize, but I really felt at the time, and continue to feel, like I needed every clue I could possibly find. It turns out that Miko had checked a book out of the library that day, and Anna was able to provide the title of that book. It was called Strange Adventures in the Rag Trade by a writer named Arnold Milne. A cursory internet search didn't yield anything on that title or the author. I'll come back to that book later, but right now, we're heading back to the arcade game restoration shop to see Frank and Dave.
It's Defender 2, all right.
That's rare, right?
Yeah, but I don't think it's worth much. I don't think anybody's gonna believe it's the real thing.
What do you think?
Well, I've seen a lot of these things.
And?
And I really can't see any difference between this and any of the Stargate or Defender logic boards ever stored. If it's a fake, it's perfect. I don't understand why anybody would go to all the trouble. It's not like anybody is looking for something like this. This was built from the ground up. There's no way it was modified.
Are you sure?
Positive.
Okay.
You want to play it?
Hell is yes. Is that okay?
Yeah, it's cool.
So, I played Stargate. Or, I suppose more accurately, I played Defender 2. I'd been dying to play it at the Magician's Place, but there was just so much going on. I was a little rusty at first, but after 2 games, it all came flooding back. I still had 3 ships left when Frank and Dave told me it was time to close the shop. I let my ships get hit and turned to leave when I saw it. Are you hiring? Do you know where you should post to find the best candidates for the position? Finding great talent can be tough. Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. Thankfully, with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100+ job sites with just one click. Their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job, and they do this better than anyone else. ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike the other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use website helps you find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. And ZipRecruiter already has 9 million resumes you can search through in their database. How does this sound? Looking for help uncovering literature related to an ancient dormant god? Contact Nick Silver at the Public Radio Alliance. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, Rabbit's listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ziprecruiter.com/rabbits. That's ziprecruiter.com/rabbits. One more time. To try it for free, go to ziprecruiter.com/rabbits. Here at the Public Radio Alliance, we use Stamps.com. We use Stamps.com because we wanted to save money, of course. But most importantly, we wanted to save time. Stamps.com is convenient, easy, reliable, and flexible. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. With Stamps.com, buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package using your own computer and printer. Stamps.com is more powerful than a postage meter at just a fraction of the cost. Print postage for letters or packages at your convenience 24/7. So, whether you're sending out menus for your brand new restaurant filled with cool ancient video games, or you're sending fan mail to your favorite podcast, you know, the podcast about that potentially mythic and quite possibly deadly game? You need to save time and money. You need Stamps.com. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use the promo code RABBITS for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Get started with Stamps.com today, and within minutes, you'll be printing postage right from your desk. Go to Stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in RABBITS. That's Stamps.com. Enter RABBITS. With Stamps.com, you'll never have to go to the post office again. I had gotten the high score. 3 letters filled the screen. WTF. And right below the letters, a 3-word question. Where's the future? Below that, the name Hazel and the graphic of a rabbit. Below the rabbit, there were 4 more words. Find Harley, gone hunting. I took a bunch of photos of the screen with my phone. What's this?
I have no idea.
It's not standard.
No shit.
I asked Dave to take a look at the program itself, but he told me that type of exploration exceeded his qualifications. I asked them to hang on to the ROM until I had time to take it to the magician. They said that would be fine. A search for the phrase, "Find Harley, gone hunting," turned up no results found. I took another look on the deep web for more information on the name Hazel connected to that phrase, but I couldn't find anything that appeared to be related. Another search, a search for the term dangerous game, resulted in numerous hits. About 40 results down was a site titled, "In Search of the World's Most Dangerous Game." The thing that made me click on the link was a picture, a photo of an old Polaroid, featuring a black rabbit that had been stenciled into a sidewalk somewhere. Aside from the photo, the rest of the website was text only, which isn't all that odd on the darknet. There was nothing but a form submission box with a submit button, no additional information at all. I typed everything I could think of into the box and pressed submit. Find Harley gone hunting. Rabbits. Hazel. WTF, the works. But nothing happened. At first. A few minutes later, I received an email from a Gmail account. The Real Batman 28. There was nothing in the body of the message. The subject read, "What do you want?" I replied with one word, "Rabbits." A few seconds later, I received a reply. It was an address and a time. The location was about 20 minutes from my place. The Real Batman 28 gave me an hour to get there. I messaged Jones, but didn't receive a reply, so I called Harper and asked her to tag along.
So what the hell's going on?
It's hard to explain.
Clearly.
I'm looking for you, Miko.
I got that part. It's the whole part about the strange game and meeting some weird comic book guy in a warehouse in this part of town.
We'll be fine. You brought your taser, right?
You're fucking with me. Yeah, fine. Wait until some weirdo's wearing our skin as a coat.
We're here.
You're sure?
Yeah.
Great.
It was an old coffee roasting and grinding warehouse that had been converted into artist live and workspaces. I'd actually been here before, a couple of times. It was pretty cool. I'm gonna knock.
I have pepper spray.
Settle down. The door opened, and we met Batman. He had a kind, moon-shaped face, stubble that would never qualify as a beard, and he was wearing a rare Doctor Who TARDIS t-shirt I'd never seen before. He was sucking on a lollipop and trying pretty hard to look cool. I'm sure the lollipop was an affectation he put a lot of thought into, along with the music that was playing as we entered his lair. It was the Kinks song, Destroyer. I love the Kinks, although I do prefer their earlier stuff. I'm referring to him as Batman, because that's what he told us to call him. Batman.
Thanks for coming over.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for seeing us.
What do you know about rabbits?
Well, I was gonna ask you the same question.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is Mona.
He was renting out most of the basement. It was a huge space, filled with old mannequins and a bunch of movie props. There were movie posters all over the walls. The Usual Suspects, Pulp Fiction, and The Rescuers Down Under, to name a few. He pulled back a curtain at the far end of the room, dramatically, to reveal a huge bank of video monitors of various sizes and resolutions. There were more than 100 of them. They filled the entire back wall of the warehouse. Above the monitors, there was a banner that read, "We want the future we were promised, not the future we deserve. Hazel." Below the giant bank of monitors was a very long desk and a very comfortable-looking easy chair. This was Mona. Apparently, Mona was some kind of DIY citywide surveillance setup. I'll let Batman tell it himself.
For the last 20 years, I've been working on an elaborate citywide network of cheap battery-operated and solar-powered cameras and portable microphones. If the FBI and NSA are watching and listening to us, and you better believe they are, well, I decided a long time ago that I was going to be watching and listening right back.
You did this all by yourself?
I had some help. We've created something similar in San Francisco, Los Angeles, Paris, London, New York, and a bunch of other cities.
We?
Yes.
Okay.
In order to achieve full coverage, most of the network is audio, but there's a lot of video as well.
What do you mean, full coverage? The entire city?
Of course.
You can listen to the entire city of Seattle?
In a manner of speaking, pretty much, yeah.
Well, that sounds like a lot of data.
It is.
Well, you can't possibly parse it all yourself.
Me? No. That's Mona's job.
Mona, your computer?
My algorithm, yes.
What does Mona do?
She makes this happen.
He pressed a few buttons on one of his keyboards, and the monitors suddenly all changed. They became part of a large map. It was a map of the city, with all kinds of symbols and colors.
What does all this mean?
She notifies me when something out of the ordinary happens. Mona's a mix of pattern recognition software, facial recognition, speech interpretation, traffic monitoring, and fractal modeling.
Wow.
Yeah, just wait till we get quantum computers. Shit is gonna get real.
Real. Right. So, you're using this...
Mona.
Sorry. Mona, right. You're using Mona to dig into rabbits.
That's been part of my focus over the past few years, yes. Are you familiar with Hazel?
Kind of.
We're working to help spread Hazel's message, to create the future we deserve.
Any progress?
Well, we haven't taken down any banks or anything, yet.
Yet.
But we're working on it.
Great.
It takes a lot to motivate the world.
Yeah, I bet. Why are you so focused on looking into Hazel specifically? Didn't she or he lose the game?
Hazel chose not to finish, as a form of protest.
Really?
Yes. Can you imagine? Getting to the end, so close to the prize, to becoming an agent or billionaire, or more importantly, understanding all the secrets of the universe, and then just stepping away?
That does sound difficult.
No shit. Hazel's a goddamn revolutionary hero. Your turn. What do you know about rabbits?
I framed my interest in rabbits solely around the search for my missing friend. I shared some of what I was able to dig up on Yumiko. The creepy video she couldn't turn away from, the computer coming to life on its own, and the lighthouse question. I left out a lot, of course, including Yumiko's theory of Hazel as murderer. I wasn't sure I could trust Batman yet. I asked him if there was anything he could think of that might help me locate Yumiko.
I can take a look at the library. Looks like there was an incident report right around the time your friend was in there. Yeah, see the flashing yellow square?
Yeah.
There was a sighting. The ones who wear gray.
You don't call them wardens?
Holy shit. Wait, do you think they might have been wardens?
I have no idea. What do you think?
I think that would be extraordinarily bad.
Where were they?
Outside the library.
Can you show me?
The sighting was reported by someone on the street. It wasn't actually captured on camera. They were spotted a few blocks away. Their radio frequency transmitters were active here and here.
How do you know their transmitters were active?
They communicate using very distinct frequencies. Mona's programmed to search for them.
Well, how come they weren't caught on camera? I mean, it looks like you have access to a lot of cameras in that area.
I believe they know how to avoid the cameras. Or they have some kind of cloaking device.
Like in Star Trek?
You like Star Trek?
Jesus.
So, what if those people in gray actually were wardens?
What do you know about wardens?
Not much. Only that they're some kind of security force or something.
Nobody knows who or what they are. When they show up, it's time to run.
Right.
I've always kind of imagined the wardens as some kind of, you know, bald dude sitting around a table in outer space. I never thought they would be the people in gray.
And you're sure they were there, the people in gray?
They were definitely there, whoever they were. None of my operatives would falsify a sighting.
Okay, switching gears a little.
All right.
What do you know about the people in gray?
Just that they wear gray and communicate using very specific frequencies.
What did they say when they were communicating?
It's always scrambled, encrypted somehow, serious tech.
So they could be saying anything?
Yeah. Or they could be speaking another language. Who knows?
He went on to say that when Mona triggers an incident report, all of that data is archived for later examination. He told me that sometimes incident reports come through in batches, and it can take a while for him to get to them, which is what had happened to this particular incident report near the library. He hadn't looked into it yet. He was willing to grant me access to that material, provided I examined it on the premises, and only for a few hours. I dug in and found the dreadlock guy almost immediately. It was a wig. He'd had it on when he entered the library and must have removed it before he left. Mona provided a perfectly framed photo of the guy's face without the dreadlocks. I recognized him. It was a guy I'd seen before, somebody who'd been staying with one of Yumiko's neighbors for the past 6 months or so. A guy named Vincent. This revelation spun things off in another direction for a few days. I brought a copy of the video to the police. It turns out they'd already picked up Vincent Barnes. They picked him up and cleared him shortly after Yumiko disappeared. They asked me where I got the video. I told them it arrived at my door, in a plain brown, unmarked envelope. I could tell they weren't impressed. Vincent Barnes told the police that Yumiko had been worried she was being followed by strange men, and that she'd asked Vincent to follow her as a security measure. But Vincent had a huge crush on Yumiko. She actually had to have a talk with him about boundaries when he started waiting outside her door for her to get home. He'd also bought her some flowers and other unwanted presents. He said that things had changed between them, that they were just friends, and he understood that completely. He was fine with it. I wasn't sure what to think. The police eventually released Vincent Barnes. I went to speak with him, but he wasn't home. I spoke with Yumiko's neighbor, Matheson. He was the guy Barnes had been staying with. Carly Parker.
Nice to meet you, or see you again.
Me too.
What can I do for you?
Well, I was wondering about your friend Vincent.
Vincent Barnes?
Yeah.
He's not my friend, actually.
No?
He's just renting a room I put on Airbnb.
Oh. Well, do you know when he might be back?
He will be back here.
No?
No, he took off last week with all his stuff.
Did you tell the police that?
Of course.
Okay.
Hey, I hope they find Yumiko soon.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Hey, do you think Vincent may have had anything to do with Yumiko's disappearance?
I don't think so.
No?
No, I mean, the guy was kind of weird, and he definitely had a thing for Yumiko, but...
Like a murdery thing?
No, more like a brotherly thing. He said he was protecting her from the people in gray who were following her, but Vincent was kind of messed up. Autistic, and, well, he kept to himself.
Did he say anything else about the people in gray?
Nothing I can remember.
And he was diagnosed as autistic?
Diagnosed by me.
Oh. But you told the police about him, about Vincent and his obsession with Yumiko.
Of course.
Did he tell you anything else about the police? Like what they were asking him, or did he mention a game?
Nothing like that. The detective just said they wanted to ask Vincent about Yumiko. When he came home, he seemed pretty broken up about it, too.
Right. Could you let me know if he shows up here again?
He won't.
Right, but if he does.
Sure, but he won't.
Okay, thanks.
Sure, no problem.
So Vincent Barnes had been following Yumiko. He claimed it was because she'd asked him to. I had no idea if that was true, and if it were true, whether or not it was significant. While I was considering the whole benign stalker turned potential abductor thing, Jones called with an update.
Is now a good time to talk?
Yeah, of course. What's up?
It's Marigold.
And what about her?
I asked another question in the forum, and I believe she's answered it.
What other question?
Where is Yumiko?
Any answer?
Just a sec.
She crawls through the world, through the grass and the snow. She lifts up the boughs, and the bride walks below. The passenger flew high and pure long ago. The girl in the game, tell her all that you know. That was another poem by Rhonda from Rhode Island. Thank you, Rhonda. That gives you another entry into the contest. So for those of you that have entered, don't forget that we'll be coming up to the grand.
Let me guess. You received another set of numbers that told you where to find this audio?
Yes.
What do you think it means?
I think it means you need to answer a question.
You believe the passenger is a reference to the passenger pigeon?
It certainly sounds like it.
Do you think Yumiko's the girl in the game?
No.
You think it's me?
I think it might be, yeah.
Okay, and you're gonna tell me all that you know?
Well, that depends.
On what?
On how you answer the question.
What question?
Do you want to go through your entire life half awake? Or do you want to put in the effort to see, to go deeper? But before you answer, it's like the red or blue pill in the Matrix. It's going to be impossible for you to return to the world you knew before. Things are never going to look the same.
If I choose the blue pill?
Red, I think. Wait, hold on. Which one did Keanu choose?
No, I think you're right. The red one. Looks like I'm off to Wonderland. Tell me everything you know about rabbits. It's Rabbits. I'm Carly Parker. We'll be back again in 2 weeks. Until then, stay safe. If you enjoy Rabbits, you'll love our other podcast, Tanis. Tanis is a docudrama about an ancient and mysterious myth, perhaps the last genuine mystery of the information age. Download the podcast The Guardian calls compelling and wildly addictive at itunes.com/Tanis or tanispodcast.com. Tanis, it's television for your ears.
The Black Tapes is a serialized docudrama about one journalist's search for the truth, her enigmatic subject's mysterious past, and the literal and figurative ghosts that haunt them both. Subscribe to The Black Tapes by visiting theblacktapes.com or itunes.com/theblacktapes.
Rabbits is a Public Radio Alliance and Minnow Beats Whale production. Produced by Hollis Adams Lane. Produced, mixed, and edited by Terry Miles and Carly Parker.
Additional editorial and production assistance by Morgan Stevens. Associate producers Tara Pratt and Bailey Everett. Producer Emeritus Mackenzie Howard. Executive producers Terry Miles and Hollis Adams Lane. You can support Rabbits by visiting our website at rabbitspodcast.com and clicking on support in the top right corner. If you enjoy Rabbits, please rate and especially review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you found us. Reviews are key to keeping Rabbits on the charts where people can find our show. Thank you so much for listening to Rabbits. For legal and safety reasons, we've elected to change some names and leave others out entirely. We don't do this very often, but we're not willing to compromise people's safety for any reason. Thanks again for listening to Rabbits.